Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Very, very excited to talk to you today, particularly when I found out that you were Quentin Tarantino's go-to person, because I could do a whole hour of just talking to you about the songs and choices in Tarantino films.
Oh, yes. That's a whole nother thing in itself.
It really is.
Really.
It really, really is. So, very quickly,
he's the reason I'm a music supervisor, by the way.
Well, that's a great thing. So, very quickly, in just a few sentences, tell our readers exactly what it is a music supervisor is responsible for.
We handle all musical aspects of a film or television show, okay. Basically, in a nutshell, which can encompass. The aiding in the selection of songs, but also aiding in the selection of composers, weighing in on lending advice and suggestions regarding score cues, and also in my experience, I like to do my own clearances. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like it's important to be able to make suggestions to directors and showrunners that we can ultimately afford.
Right. That makes sense. So, you know, as I mentioned, you have worked on several Quentin Tarantino films. And as you mentioned, he got you your basically start, or this is why you're a music supervisor today. One thing just...
Yeah, I met him 28 years ago, basically.
That's insane. One thing, I have often heard that he writes in music or songs that inspired him directly into the scripts. What does that lead you to do at that point? Does it, you know?
Yeah, it's so easy. Well, he's actually said in recent interviews, that I'm the unsung hero of his filmography, which was more than anything I could have ever asked for, because I really have made it my job in working with Quentin to make sure that his vision is complete, that mm-hmm. that he can have anything for his films, because as you go through, yes, he writes with he goes into his record room and gets his inspiration from the music in his record room, and he writes with certain things in mind. So the way that we start working together, oftentimes I'll go over to his record room and he'll tell me the story and pause to like put the needle down on the on the turntable and say, this is, you know, kind of the idea, and this is what I'm thinking, so it kind of is it's basically in certain, certain of his films have been different. Right. With, for instance, for Django Unchained, I was able to get him to accept new songs written for him specifically, for the story specifically, things that he hadn't heard before, which was really kind of a big, wonderful collaboration for that project. The story spoke to so many great songwriters that it just really afforded some really powerful songs.
Sure.
And in the case of The Hateful Eight, I was able to work with him he's been very resistant to using a composer to create new music. I was able to work with him to get him the opportunity to work with his icon, Ennio Morricone.
Right, which was a tremendous
score. Through that collaboration, we were able to get Ennio his first ever Best Original Score Academy Award, which was a huge deal.
Yeah.
And so when music supervisors are responsible for so much, and when you're doing the job correctly, you really are helping the success of the project. I don't stay in my lane.
Right.
notoriously, I do not stay in my lane, which is, you know, not, you know, can cause friction, but I view it as necessary to help the project and the success of the project. So, I do whatever is needed.
Excellent.
So different projects are different. Different directors, different showrunners have different associations with music and different orientations to music. Some don't have, you know, as much of a musical background as Quentin does, or musical tastes as Quentin does. So I bring different skills to all the different projects.
So I do want to jump into Little Flowers Everywhere and Mrs. America, but I do have to say, in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, hearing and getting to know Neil Diamond's Brother Love's Traveling Salvation Show and the way that that is used in the film brought me such incredible joy. I had never heard that song before. And then all of a sudden, like that, you know, and I love the movie, but that, when that scene came on and when Margaret is dancing on the street and you know, the sun beating down, and it was like a revelation at that point, really, for me.
Well, that's the power of a well-used song.
Absolutely.
That's the power of music given its full opportunity to shine in a story. So that's, you know, and that's a Quentin Forte, man.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad to hear that. But there were lots of moments in that movie that just made my heart.
Sure. You know, the scene with all the, and I don't, you know, I'm embarrassed to say, I have the song like in the back of my head, but the song that's played when the, all the neon comes on, at El Coyote and at, I cannot remember what was playing at that moment, but anyway, so talking about those, that sort of revelation moment, you know, Little Fires Everywhere had that same sort of revelation moment, I think, for at least for all of Twitter, when You Ought to Know came on, you know, that violin version, that
yes, just,
it was brilliant. Talk to me about bringing that into the piece and creating that, and you know, how did that end up there?
I had no idea that resonated. I haven't really been following much, so that's really great to hear.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
There's actually bookended moments of Alanis Morissette in that episode, with the cover of Uninvited that happens at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really kind of important that it was Alanis. And you know, it's just many of the music choices for Little Fires Everywhere were made from, rooted in character.
Right.
So when I first came on that project, I made extensive playlists for each character, even the characters you don't hear their musical tastes. I made, like, Elena. You really only hear one song associated with Elena, Reese Witherspoon's character, mm-hmm. and that was Little Bird, Annie Lennox. But it was an important one because it's the first one we ever hear over her morning ritual in the pilot. It's our introduction to her, and it also was thematic. We had a bird theme throughout the story, which was associated with motherhood and Izzy. So anyways, I made playlists for each character, and Izzy's playlists were based on her personality and based on things that she might have listened to at the time. Like, it was set in the 90s, but it was not anybody's intention to do a 90s, you know, Billboard chart hits throughout the whole thing. So that was what also made it really necessary to really think about each character and really delve into their personalities and suggest music based on that rather than just looking up the chart hits.
Mm-hmm.
So while You Ought to Know was a chart hit,
yes,
it suited that moment because Izzy was feeling betrayed and she was feeling angry and she was practicing. It was a longer scene, but we ended up using it over the montage of Elena snooping and hungrily looking for information and deceit and betrayal. So it was, it kind of came out of that, Izzy's personality and what was happening with her at the time. Mm-hmm. And we had our composers, do a rendition of it. Mm-hmm. And we ended up just making it work into as score. And then again, we had the great, Echo Alanis moment with Uninvited,
which I also love. I've always loved that song. That song is so
haunting.
Love
that song so much.
Yes, it's gorgeous.
And there were so many other songs that were, you know, considered and tried, and you know, for different reasons. And I just always really held fast to the idea of Uninvited because it's off the beaten track, and because of the Alanis echoing, and it's a powerful song. And I knew that a cover of it by Belle Saint would be just killer. One of the things about, I would like to speak about the covers in mm-hmm. this show. It was really important to make sure that the covers were, because doing covers of you know, 90s songs isn't an original, you know, it's not a new idea. But one of the most important things about it for us was to make sure that the covers were organic to the score and to the story. So they weren't like some shiny new cover that was just kind of slapped on the end of an episode. It was really essential that they be seamless mm-hmm. with the score. And that's one of the beauties of having our composer, you know, is a machine, Isabella Summers from Florence and the Machine, and Mark Isham, producing the tracks as well, producing the covers. So a lot of thought and effort went into making sure that everything was kind of seamless.
A lot of collaboration, I would assume, between Mark, you know, not only from his production of the covers, but also to mirror that sound with his accompanying score.
Yes, with Mark and Isabella. When I first came on the project, one of the things that was, because I'd loved the book and I loved the story and just loved walking into the, I mean, forgive me, but I loved walking into the room and meeting all these women producers and creators, and it was just really kind of a fun experience. So what hit me was, this is an opportunity for a real female story. Because Florence and the Machine, it has such a powerful, dramatic female sound.
Right.
Why not get, you know, the architect of that sound, Isabella Summers, and as a part of this score, and put her with, you know, maestro Mark Isham, who is just brilliant at tender, beautiful melodies. Mm-hmm. So putting the two of them together and having them collaborate and create that crazy, fiery opening title sequence, and then also working with them to do the covers. It was really very collaborative and very powerful.
So you've already sort of talked about how every character has its own playlist, you know, that sort of associates to the theme. You know, like Reese's initial song has a tie to the theme of the bird and then the motherhood. What do you think best represents, what song that was selected best represents the themes of the overall series?
Wow, that's hard because there's so many.
Right.
That, because no song was just thrown in there, you know. Everything was very well, I mean, very, very, you know what I mean? That sounds, so everything, even, I'm thinking.
That's okay. Take your time.
Because, you know,
I mean, because you're right. I mean, there's so much going on in the series that maybe it's hard to pinpoint one that sort of consolidates everything, because there's, you know, because there's the themes of race, and there's the themes of motherhood and children and abandonment and, you know, all of those things. And it would be hard to find one particular piece that sort of encapsulates all of that.
I think actually one that really stands out to me, even though, as I say, I mean, there are several, I mean, all of them, I think, all of them have something to do with the story and are rooted in the story, because that was the nature of the work on this project. Mm-hmm. But I think Bitch, the cover of Meredith Brooks, Shelley Piken's song Bitch is a good example of a song that encompasses, because that song is... it becomes an anthem.
Right.
And it's pretty powerful the way that Ruby sings it, Ruby Amanzu. And it plays over a moment, because in the story, this doesn't happen until episode 6, which is the flashback episode. Mm-hmm. You don't really understand what's going on underneath Mia's exterior.
Right.
Don't understand why she's being so standoffish and why she has this, what's so secretive about her. And you get to see it in this flashback episode. And the song plays over her transformation and her escape and her acceptance. And it also plays over Elena's transformation and acceptance to who they become.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that one is a really, if I had to pick one, it'd be that one.
So switching gears to, Mrs. America, I want to start with the title, the song that is played over the opening themes or the opening credits. Fifth of Beethoven, other than being a completely awesome song that I completely forgot about, I remembered it from my childhood, from my parents' records. Other than being a awesome song, why was that chosen?
Okay, because it is the perfect blend of Phyllis's sensibilities. Conservative Phyllis listens to classical music and things that are non-threatening, and it's a disco version of Beethoven, so it's also blended with the sexier, freer, more with the times, more current to the 70s times, feminists. So it's a perfect blending of the two sides of the story.
I cannot tell you the joy also that I had for this. Music brings me a lot of joy, I have to say. But
just great.
Hearing that was fantastic. Like I just was like, oh my God, I forgot about that song. It's amazing.
And with the visuals, I mean, the opening title sequence is so cool.
It really, really is. And when I, on the screeners that I'd gotten, it had temp track under the bottom of it, and I was thinking, surely they're going to keep this song. They can't. There's nothing more perfect than this. I will never like anything else. And I don't even know why that was there, because it is in the final version, of course. Given, you know, you kind of spoke to this about Little Fires Everywhere and not wanting to be just a jukebox kind of soundtrack. But given, you know, Mrs. America is set in the 70s and there's so much popular music in the 70s, there's so much great music from the 70s. How do you, you know, consolidate sort of a soundtrack to the show, and, you know, with at the same time as I assume that you were doing, avoiding some of the popular hits, the instantly recognizable songs. Like, you know, how do you cultivate the soundtrack without just necessarily going from, you know, hit to ABBA to Bee Gees to all, you know, just to all the instantly recognizable songs?
It's a really good question, because it is a conundrum, because, I mean, it was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a period piece, as was Little Fires Everywhere, by the way.
Right. We're just not ready to accept that as a period piece.
I know, isn't that terrible? I mean, it's so silly. There were some songs in there that were actually, there was a one song in there from Reality Bites that was a film I had worked on. So it was kind of funny.
Oh, Ben Stiller was my first interview in college.
Oh my God! Really?
Yes, he was the very. I was so bad at it. at that time that sometimes I even have nightmares. I get cold sweats just thinking about that horrible interview. You know, I was a freshman in college, so.
That's a pretty amazing first get, I'll say.
It was. I was really lucky.
Okay. So, anyways, the fact that they were both period pieces was kind of funny because I was working on them kind of almost simultaneously. Again, rooting the character, the choices of music in the characters and in the story was really important. And so, yes, I had to keep an eye on what year something came out, and even to sometimes what month something came out in that year.
Oh, sure.
Because this was a historical piece, the fact that we wanted to be rooted in the story. The next day, I mean, I had really fantastic leaders on this project. Along with Davi Waller, we had really smart, passionate leaders in Stacey Scher, Anna Bowden, Ryan Fleck, Coco Francini. I mean, it was really fun to go in there and like chew on ideas and chew on song choices and really work with these. And the editors were all really engaged and passionate. Everyone who was working on this really was passionate about the story and getting it right and perfecting it. So I have to say, it was really a very creative, kind of energetically creative atmosphere around Mrs. America. So, I do want to say that. So rooting the song choices in the story was really important. Like, for instance, and also Davi, you know, from the get-go, Davi had always said she wants to tell a balanced story.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I mean, before I read any of the scripts and just had an idea of what the project was about, I started thinking, oh my God, how fun would this be to like pull something? And I started making this crazy, you know, kind of editorial playlist of songs, you know, that could be played about the women's movement that were, you know, from that time period, Having My Baby, Paul Anka, you know, I mean, Wives and Lovers, which was a huge hit that was recorded by both men and women, written by Burke Bacharach, with lyrics like, you know, comb your hair, fix your makeup, soon he will walk through the door, kind of things. But, and actually getting to work on it and reading the story, the script, it became apparent that we were telling a very balanced story about characters, and that was going to be more fun. So, for instance, in the pilot episode, the song that's at the end of the episode, when the feminists are toasting to the ERA,
mm-hmm.
and the camera pans down and shows Phyllis's face, the song is "Make Your Own Kind of Music" by Cass Elliot, which is actually something that could play to both sides, to mm-hmm. Phyllis's aspirations and to a feminist's aspirations. Basically about grabbing your own, you know, seizing the day.
Right.
Yeah. It tells the story of both sides of the story.
Yes.
And points to the great irony of Mrs. America, which is that Phyllis Schlafly is basically a feminist.
I have just one more question because I know we're a little over time, but I really appreciate your time and your engagement in this interview. This has been really fun. Watershed moment for the show for me in terms of just the way the song is working with the narrative is Sarah Paulson singing "This Land Is Your Land" in episode 8.
Yeah.
Talk to me about incorporating that. Like, you know, what were the intents and what is the theme behind that? It feels like that could be almost a banner song for the whole show.
Well, that's for sure. Because it's a historical piece, you know, it became important to have some of these moments. That was sung at rallies, as was "We Shall Overcome." Mm-hmm. "This Land Is Your Land." Did you say "We Shall Overcome"?
No, it's "This Land Is Your Land," right?
That's "This Land Is Your Land," yeah. Right? Did you know that's not public domain, by the way?
No, I didn't.
It is not public domain.
So that's why she sings it.
Yeah, it is very much under copyright. It just was a fantastic moment. And when Flo says, you realize, to Alice, she says, you know, you realize that's a social, you know, political song.
Right.
No, it's not. I'm trying to think of the words. What does she say? She says, you realize that's a... Does she say socialist or does she say communist?
She said socialist, I believe. Yeah, it's a socialist song. And Sarah Paulson says something to the effect of, no, it's not, it's patriotic or something like that.
Patriotic. She says exactly.
Yeah.
So that actually, I have to say, that was written into the script because that's a very specific scene that was written into the script, the whole Alice in Wonderland wandering through these various moments. I would say 108 is, I mean, of all my favorite, I mean, each of these episodes is my favorite, actually. But 108 is really fun because we do get to waver from reality for a minute because Alice isn't a real character.
Right.
She's an amalgamation of different now people. So it got, you know, we got to be a little freer with it. And the fact that the score, we got to like delve into trippiness and, you know, her little Valium trip was kind of fun. Oh, and on this, also I have to say, you know, Chris Bowers, our composer, was really fantastic to work with. And spotting sessions and discussions of score cues was really, really facile and passionate. And there was a real specific a discussion about the idea of marching, the imagery of marching in the music and the different kinds of percussion and militaristic as opposed to kind of sound object types of freer, looser feeling. And it was really, I mean, every concept was very considered and metered and discussed. And it was like I said, it was just buzzing with creativity, this project.
And it shows in the finished product. Well, Mary, thank you so much for your time. This has been a fantastic conversation. And thank you for all of your contributions to everything that I've watched that you have contributed to and helped mold. This has been a huge treat for me.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. By the way, that was the Stones Out of Time, by the way.
You were referring to.
I didn't know if you wanted me to jump in or not.
No, please. Yes, thank you. Yes, you're right. I knew I had the song in the back of my head. I just couldn't bring it to the forefront at the moment.
Which now you won't be able to get it out of your head for the rest of the day.
Absolutely right.
Baby.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, well, it was nice talking to you. I hope that was succinct.
Yes, it was great. It was really great. Thank you so much.